want to timestamp this particular show, but it's just that time of year that we're all reminded the Colorado Rockies are a terrible, terrible baseball team. Sorry, I don't want to necessarily lose any fans, but I'm in the midst of watching some playoff baseball, and shockingly, the Rockies are not there. Alas, back to the subject at hand. Welcome to Unfiltered. I am your co-host, Dr. Samuel J. Jay Schrader and I went to Platte Park Brewing this week, where we met with Greg Matthews. Greg is not just their head brewer. He is one of the integral members of that team and has been since they got started, 7 years ago-ish. And it was a great conversation. Greg was a really, really interesting guy, and we enjoyed every part of it. So without being any more long-winded and without making any more fun of the Colorado Rockies, I will now turn it over to Jay and to Greg and to me and our conversation at Platte Park Brewing. As always, thank you for the support, and we really, really appreciate it. Take care.
This episode is brought to you by Elon Naturals. Handcrafted in Boulder, Colorado, Elon's all-natural products are made with CBD extracted from Colorado-certified hemp. Ryan and Alec Nyberg, good friends of ours, founders and co-owners of Elon, as well as big supporters of craft beer, including being supporters of the Sip Beer Fest we did earlier this year, use no toxins, no chemicals, and only certified organic ingredients in everything that they make. Whether you're looking for bath bombs, foot soaks, lip balms, pain sticks, or tinctures, Elon has you covered. And they make pet products, too. Find Elon Naturals on Instagram and Facebook, and place your order now at elonnaturals.com. When you do, plug in the promo code UNFILTERED20 at checkout for 20% off your order. Again, that's UNFILTERED20. Plug it in at checkout at elonnaturals.com for 20% off your order. This episode is also brought to you by RoofTech Precision Exteriors. Founded by a fourth-generation roofing expert and two veteran general contractors, RoofTech combines unmatched residential and commercial roofing knowledge with project management excellence, which means your next roofing project will not only be handled by those that know what they're doing, but know how to complete your project without wasting your time. Find RoofTech on Instagram and Facebook and learn more at RoofTechCo.com. That's RoofTechCo.com. And when you schedule your roof replacement project, mention Unfiltered and receive a free upgrade to impact-resistant Class 4 shingles. I have no idea what that means, but it sounds like it's a hell of a deal. Again, that's RoofTechCo.com.
We are up and rolling.
Nice. So,
good sir, can you introduce yourself?
Good afternoon. I am Greg Matthews, the brewmaster for Platte Park Brewing Company here in South Denver. We're on our sixth year, and I have been in the industry professionally since 2006.
What's the address? We have to ask folks.
We are at 1875 South Pearl Street, Denver, Colorado, and this is the easiest zip code you will ever remember, 80210.
80210, just yep. Like that. Now, when you opened up, that would have been, what, 2013? I'm trying to think.
Yeah, that's right.
Okay,
yeah.
So 2013, who was around? Was Parkburger was there?
Parkburger was here, yeah. Okay. And actually, this building used to be a, they colorized photos and redid cash machines. So the old 1800 cash machines, we still have one up front that they gave us when we got into the place.
So this whole building was that?
Yeah.
Okay. It wasn't two split up places? Okay. That's awesome.
Holy shit. No, this space back here was here just like you see it. Yeah. And for those of you who haven't seen it, it's just a beautiful warehouse that we've stuffed a brewery in. And then on the front side, we have, you know, the bar and eventually we opened the kitchen. Okay. So, yeah, but that was years later.
We'll get to that. I want to ask you, how much of a role did you play as kind of head of brewing operations, setting everything up? What was here when you got hired on in terms of the space?
A bunch of boxes and a kettle, you know, on the other side of the room really nothing. A lot of plans, you know, the restaurant or the bar side of it was almost finished. But back here, it was pretty much just an open space. The trench drain was done.
Okay.
And so I had... And what's interesting, and I don't want to talk too much about this, but I had just had a hernia operation. So it changed the entire way that I run a brewery.
Okay.
I don't pick anything up here. Everything is completely done so that we don't have to pick up bags of grain. We don't pick up spent grain. all the heavy lifting I engineered out of this place.
Because of the situation you were in.
Exactly, yeah. Now, life at 40.
I will say, your attention to safety is something that was clear when I walked in here, so I appreciate that.
Yeah.
What has it been like, because we'll bounce back and forth, what has it been like since y'all opened back up? When did you open back up, I guess? And then what,
you mean from COVID?
COVID, yes.
You know, and then, we were lucky. We're one of the lucky, I don't want to call it lucky, but there was some luck involved. We never shut down. Because we have the Gates Deli, and an associate or with Platte Park Brewing Company, we were slinging burritos and beer all through March, April, May. We slowed down, obviously, quite a bit. You know, I went from working every day to maybe twice a week. Sent my assistant home just to make sure she and her family were safe. But, we never really shut the doors. And, in fact, I would say opened them a little further for the community.
How has the kind of Pearl Street community, I guess, embraced what's going on, and how have they supported what you're attempting to do to kind of continue to be an operational business?
This and Inglewood are my two favorite neighborhoods in Denver.
Okay.
You know, and this neighborhood has supported us 100% from day one. Mm-hmm. I mean, there were, I'm going to say, times in March when things were really uncertain. We had a 6-foot socially distanced line all the way down to Evans just to come in and get a crowler and a burrito, you know. So, and I don't believe that every single one of these people needed a crowler and a burrito.
Yeah.
They were just here because they knew we needed them.
When you were in the planning stages of this, what kind of conversations were you having with the owners, the co-owners, in regards to your brand identity and who you were going to be as a brewery because of where you are?
That's really interesting. And I won't dwell on this too much either, other than to say that the branding we have today is not the branding we intended.
Okay.
We had our original name. And if you come into the brewery, you can see the old flag up on the wall. But the original name had some litigation issues.
Okay.
So we had to change all of our branding literally a month before we opened.
Okay.
Thanks to some cease and desists. So
not uncommon in the industry.
Not uncommon in the industry, but kind of a bummer.
Yeah.
So I can't say, you know, honestly, the idea man here is Colby Rankin.
Okay.
And he's our owner. Mm-hmm. And he's the guy that designs all our great labels with a little outside help. He's the guy that comes up with ice cream parlors, double New England hazies. You know, he is that guy. And my job, more or less, is just to make his dreams come to fruition.
Get that stool. Sit down. Stool. Yeah, that stool. Jay, Greg.
Good to meet you, Jay.
There we go.
Good to see you, buddy. Thank you, man. I appreciate
it. We've had business meetings.
Yeah, make yourself at home. We got chairs, stools. Go grab a beer, you know?
Bingo.
Yeah.
So Colby is obviously kind of a key player in all of that.
True, yeah.
How much does he kind of push you towards doing things that are cutting edge? I mean, is he that motor, or is it you kind of staying ahead of trends?
No, I'm not going to lie. I'm in my late 40s. I've been walking this planet for a while now. I'm not the guy that stays on the latest trends.
Okay.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
He's a much younger man than I am, and he is the one that has his pulse on what's going on.
But you are, I mean, you live close, correct?
Oh, yeah. I'm a couple of blocks away, or a mile away down in Inglewood.
I keep cutting you off, but I mean, I would assume that being in a relatively young, vibrant neighborhood probably keeps you pretty hip, right?
It does.
Okay.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you have to, you know, I can't say I necessarily know where things are going.
Yeah.
You know, I never saw seltzer ever happening. Mm-hmm. I don't understand.
Yeah.
But absolutely. You know, you wake up every morning, you walk around, you look around, you eat it, you live it, you breathe it. Mm-hmm. But still, I need him to kind of keep me grounded with what's going on in the current generation. And it, you know, I've been doing this for 16 years, maybe almost 20 years now. Anyway, he can come to me with an idea, and because I've been doing this for so long, we can pull it off. I don't test batch anymore. You know what I mean? Like, I just have such an innate knowledge of the grain, the season of the hops, the yeast, and, you know, all the things that go into making a good beer, that if he comes to me with an idea, we have it worked out in 5 minutes.
Just like that.
Yeah.
You keep referencing your history as a brewer. For those who don't know it, who those who, you know, haven't looked at your LinkedIn or gone to the website, how did you get started?
You know, it was I spent a few years in the Caribbean.
Okay.
And I came back.
He's a Grateful Dead fan, too.
Hang on. Yeah. We need to elaborate on that a little bit at some point. Yeah, I'll get a beer in a minute. Okay. I'm good.
Long story short, my wife's job took us to the Caribbean. Okay. And I drank a lot of bad beer down there. And when I came back, I don't want to say I got into home brewing, because I only did it for about 10 to 20 batches.
Okay.
And what was happening was I didn't have the control that I wanted to have in my kitchen. And so one morning, I'm sitting there reading Dr. Lewis and Dr. Young's dissertation on brewing for the University of Davis. And my wife comes in from a night shift, and she's like, "What are you doing?" I'm like, "Oh, well, I'm getting ready to go to my shift, and I'm just kind of seeing what I can do to make my home beers better, you know?" She's like, "You're reading a junior level collegiate manual on the art of brewing." I'm like, "Yeah." She's like, "You hate your job. Why don't you just do that for a living?" And it was just like a light bulb went off. The next thing I know, I'm in the American Brewers Guild. This was in the old days when you could just call them and get in,
okay. You
know? And then literally a year later, I'm an apprentice at AleSmith in San Diego.
That's quite the story.
What was your old job? Did I miss this? I mean,
no, we didn't talk. You know, my
I'm
wife
just
was
always
in,
curious.
Was in San Diego for, and I'll just say, a government job.
Okay,
and
enough.
You know, in San Diego, I was the trailing spouse. You know what I mean? I took care of the house. I was working in hotels.
Gotcha.
Which I really enjoyed. I mean, I like the hospitality industry in San Diego, telling people where to serve, good food. But there comes a point in time where you kind of get tired of waiting on people,
okay.
And that's. It wasn't that I didn't enjoy being a hotelier. It was just too much for me at that time in my life. And, you know, the next thing I know, literally, I'm going to school to learn how to do this professionally.
That's awesome.
And I never homebrewed again. I literally never did it again.
It seems not odd, but that's usually not – it's not often we get that story from the brewers. You know, oftentimes they're chemists. They are science, you know, folks.
Yeah.
Did you always have that kind of science-based perspective?
Yeah, that's my family.
Okay.
I mean, my great-grandfather sent a rocket ship to Mars.
Okay.
So I have that. Even though it wasn't necessarily my strong suit, I was a language person in college and economics. But I definitely have the mind that pushes me. And, you know, it's also sort of a Germanic background.
Yeah.
You strive for perfection. You know what I'm saying? And that's what was frustrating me on the homebrew side. I'm like, I just can't. It's not impossible, but it's very difficult with the equipment. And that drove me to bigger and better heights. I'm driven to make the same. And I, you know, it's the idea of perfection in beer is very different for different people. But I think for most professionals, the idea is, even regardless of equipment, you get the same product every time.
Mm-hmm.
So my tropical snow dance always tastes like tropical snow dance. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And that was what was frustrating me as a young brewer. It's really hard on a home system to do that consistently.
So before we get your continuation, I want to ask, because we're in here, as you were building this out,
mm-hmm.
I know quality is extremely important to you. What kind of design did you put in to make sure that you have that repetition?
A lot of that falls on whom you buy your equipment from, you know, because a 10-barrel system, which is what we run here, doesn't have a lot of variables, but there are guys who do it better than other guys and girls, you know what I'm saying? And I think because I did spend 10 years in San Diego working and brewing, and by the way, if you're in San Diego, please go check out the guy who taught me everything, Marty Mendiola, at Second Chance Brewing.
Okay.
So if you're ever out there, please go see him. But
like a road trip.
San Diego. Yeah, there's so many breweries in San Diego. You get lost in a minute. But so I knew of Premier Stainless mainly because of their keg washing systems.
Okay.
And so it wasn't necessarily the design, but whom we wanted to bring the equipment in.
Okay.
And then the design part of it was more like, how does grain flow through the system, you know, with minimal effort? How do we get grain out of the system with minimal effort? And then, you know, beyond things, little things like, you know, I need a heat exchanger that can do this.
Yeah.
You know, I need a keg washer that can do that.
Yeah.
And then Premier just, they made it happen.
This is beautiful.
It is I have nothing but, I don't know what kind of work they're doing today. People may hate me for saying that, but 6 years ago, 7 years ago, when we were looking at it, they were our number one choice. Yeah.
And it's so clean in here. Now, I got to ask you, because we're looking, there's obviously some room for expansion here.
Yep, sure is.
Was that the plan? Is that the plan?
I mean, absolutely. We wanted enough space where, and, you know, the thing about Platt, I think we've been pretty wise over the last 6-7 years, because there's a lot of guys that overexpanded and are no longer with us. You know what I mean? And so we've just been slow and steady.
There's really one not far from here.
Yeah, I know.
Looking at the...
Yeah, I see the sticker, too.
Not to keep throwing those guys under the bus.
No, but I mean, it's...
Slow and steady is key.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's been my mantra the whole time. Make good beer.
Yeah.
Make sure every beer conforms. And then just let it grow naturally. You know, don't force anything.
I was trying to think... we went up to Lafayette. Who do we talk to in Lafayette or Louisville?
Odd 13.
Yeah. I mean, they have a head of quality, right?
That evolved from a
one bad batch. I mean, it makes total sense. Okay, so
I was always told as a young brewer that the only thing you have is your reputation.
Yeah.
And don't let go of it, because once that happens, you're done. So.
Yeah. I mean, who just recently had to recall a bunch of. Well, I hate to admit it, Odyssey to recall a bunch of their pumpkin.
Oh, yeah.
Because the cans weren't sealed right or something. So, yeah, I don't think at this point in an Odyssey-type Odyssey, they're probably going to be able to recover from that pretty easily. But Odd 13's tale was that, you know, it nearly ruined them.
Yeah, absolutely. You just can't be putting – you can't do that, you know. And it happens. Look, some of my good friends down south of here have had that same issue. They win medals at GABF.
Yeah.
You know, things happen outside of our control, especially when you get into packaging. I mean, packaging is we do can once a month. You know, we put out about 20 barrels in cans. But it's an animal it's a whole nother animal, packaging.
Where are the cans? Where are the packages then? Where do you put them?
That's, you know, for us, we don't have a canning line. We don't have specific tanks for that. So we use a local company and they come in with it. It has become more difficult just because of what's going on with aluminum and those sorts of things, you know, more supply problems. If you could see my shelves, you'd notice there's a few holes of Weyermann product, one of my favorite specialty grains, but they're in Germany and we're here. And, you know, it's not as automatic as it was 2 years ago, that's for sure.
This is crazy.
Yeah, it is. The planning of this job is impossible. It's like herding cats on a good day.
Mm-hmm.
With everything that's going on right now, it's exponentially harder, yeah.
We were talking a little bit before we started recording. What was the craft beer? Maybe you didn't even know it was a craft beer that changed everything for you as a beer drinker.
There are a couple things for me personally. One, my background is language and economics, so I did a semester in Germany in the mid-90s. And you realize very quickly that, and again, this was the mid-90s. Things have changed a lot since then, but... My point is, you realize very quickly that the beers we're buying here in 1993-95, they weren't very good. So, you know, I've got mad love for, you know, Scheinerbach and Ken Grossman out at Sierra Nevada, because when I came back from that college experience, those were the guys that I was like, oh, okay, we do make some decent beer here. Yingling, if you could get it, you know. Sam Adams, sort of the lesser Yingling at that time period in my mind. And so when I came back from that experience, I realized, wow, we – and in fact, I I ended up drinking wine for a long time because we just didn't have it. And at that time period, I, you know, again, in the mid-90s, homebrewing wasn't even, I'm sure there's a lot of people homebrewing, but it wasn't a well-known hobby, right? So it took me another 8 years before I actually started making my own beer to try to compete with my memories of that time period in Germany. Yeah.
It's nice to hear somebody say Scheiner Bock, because for me, that was one of my first kind of craft beers.
Yeah. Well, there was Celis down there too.
Yep.
But he's, I don't know what happened to them, and you know, but that was it really. Yeah, you know,
I think it's interesting to hear Yingling in the conversation. I don't know that in 100+ episodes that I've heard Yingling.
It's America's first.
I don't want to say it's thrown around into this conversation, but I mean, especially with the news just recently that Yingling is going to start contracting with Coors, and we'll find it on the west side of the Mississippi finally. I mean, I don't know that 100+ years of Yingling that I've only had it a couple of times I can think of. And I mean, I wouldn't have thought of it as craft. I think it gets a different kind of a reputation, especially over here, but in Colorado. But that's crazy to think about.
Yeah.
That's a beer that drove you back towards some of the German traditional craft style.
That's
which is
it.
Amazing.
Now, you and I were talking. You're a pale ale guy. Tell us a little bit about, are you making light beers? You're obviously making some stouts, some darker beers. What have you seen, I guess, being that you've been in the industry for so long, what have you seen change over the last 5 years?
You know, the grain recipe doesn't change. Right. You know what I'm saying? Like a pale ale is a pale ale. Mm-hmm. You know, pale malts, very light crystals. It's the hops. And I have this new assistant. Her name is Caroline. She's a Harriet Watt graduate. And anyway, she's working on some of her first recipes on a professional level. And I pulled up a program we had at Rock Bottom for the brewmasters to, you know, how much grain do you need, how much hops. She just put in the percentages. And it's kind of like, I don't know what the name of the one for homebrewers is, Brew God or whatever it is.
Okay.
It's just a program. But regardless, I have all of my original recipes in there. So my pale ale in 2007, right? It was Cascade, Citra, Cascade, Centennial, and Simcoe.
And the big C's.
Yeah.
Okay.
With a little Simcoe backer. Is anybody making a pale ale with Centennial, Simcoe, and the Cascade's still around, obviously. She's the mother of hops. Mm-hmm. But you see my point. It's not necessarily that the base malts or, you know, that side of the recipes have changed, but it's the hops that are going in them. And then the way the hops are introduced to the wort. So in the old days, it was all about, you know, 0-60-90, you know, and dry hopping. Now you may not have hops hit the boil until the 90th minute. You know, you put them in, you turn it off. And because we realized, you know, through boiling, yeah, you're getting the bitterness, but you're also destroying the aroma and flavor.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And I got to give props to Coors because it was their AC Golden Brewery that kind of figured all this out. I don't think they're in AC Golden anymore, but it was those guys. And then, you know, the other thing about Coors is they shared all that information with us. So they never saw us as competition. Mm-hmm. They just wanted to make sure that Americans were making good beer. And so when those studies came out around, I'm going to say 2010, 2012, mm-hmm. somewhere in there, the entire hopping schedules changed.
Okay.
And that eventually led to where we are with hazies today, where you're barely boiling and throwing hops in at the very end and then all in dry hops.
Did you know that, Jay?
I would not have ever guessed that.
No, we've never heard that story, you know, in almost 100 episodes.
Yeah.
I had no idea. Okay. So as a beer drinker now, how do you feel about the move towards, you know, hazy is not just a trend. It seems to be staying.
No, they're beautiful beers. Yeah. They're pretty. They smell great. You know what I mean? They're just beautiful. Now, having said that, let's just go back.
Yeah.
If I had brewed a beer like that for Rock Bottom in 2007, I might have been fired. You know, like the cost of, you know, 40 pounds of hops in a 10-barrel batch or whatever it may be. The haze, you know, back then we really appreciated clarity and the ability to make a clear beer consistently. And so that's just been turned on its ear. But that doesn't make a hazy any less valid.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm taking over the conversation.
No, you're fine. Do it, please.
How you feeling?
I'm
you good?
I feel rushed.
Yeah, you're
I feel
banking.
Bad that 15-minute window that I blew it, but
no, you're good. We didn't get started until 5
it's not a surprise.
Yeah.
So you're fine.
You're all good.
I was probably fighting with the parking meter.
Totally.
Well,
okay.
Meter whatever that is, you know.
So who's doing the okay, so I'm assuming you're obviously having meetings every week.
Mm-hmm.
What are you scared at the moment? Is question A. Question B would be, what has surprised you positively over the last 7 months?
Definitely not scared.
Okay.
I just don't. It's not my nature.
Yeah.
Positively over the last 6 months has definitely been the powers that be in loosening up the alcohol laws.
Okay.
And that's happened across the country, and it has been a blessing in disguise. I can deliver beer now. You can buy, you know, a crowler out of my window now. Just a lot of the rollback of, in my mind, pointless litigation and legislation on the beer industry. You know,
yeah.
I have a good buddy in Texas who can now sell beer at his tasting room instead of tickets.
Isn't that crazy?
I know. You used to have to buy a ticket for a tour, and that gave you three beers, you know?
Interesting. I don't think I knew that about Texas.
Yeah. These are the good things that I see happening for the industry during this uncertain time period, yeah.
How much additional benefit do you think Platte Park has experienced based on where you guys are located? I mean, you're in a very walkable, very residential neighborhood.
You know, even before the troubles.
I like that, the troubles.
Yeah,
I was watching something on Ireland. But anyway, even
that
before,
was where my mind went.
Yeah, even before all that, I would say most of our guests walked.
Yeah.
You know,
I don't know
what the percentage is, but I would imagine just because of where we are in this beautiful neighborhood, I know most of my guests. You know, most of them do walk. So, and you know, it's beyond just that. Like, I've got a great relationship with Kaladi Brothers Coffee. He comes in and, you know, has a couple of IPAs. We use his coffee and our porter. I buy it on my way home. You know what I mean? So there's a lot of symbiosis that goes on just because of this neighborhood that may not have happened if I'd gotten a warehouse on the other side of town somewhere. You know?
Well, and I can speak to that. Being from the neighborhood, and we've moved out a couple of years ago, but if there was an opportunity for a late day meeting close to home that required beer, it happened right here.
Yeah.
And 9 times out of 10, I was bringing somebody that had never been into the brewery before or never been into the tap room. And I mean,
it's a nice place to hang out too.
Oh, it's an amazing place to hang out.
Back to Colby, you know, that's his brainchild up there. You know, I helped put the tanks where the tanks need to be and make sure the kegs are clean, but that's his kind of vision and what he wanted to see. So, and he brought it to fruition, and it's 6 years later, it still stands up. You know what I mean? Like, and I think 15 years from now, when you walk in, the design will still stand up. You know, I think we've changed the color of some paint. That's about it.
The space is great, but then there's some very specific things that I associate Platte Park with only. And one of them for me especially is the zip code that you guys get to take advantage of.
Oh, yeah.
And the 80210.
80210.
Did you guys talk about this already? Because
it was mentioned. You're good.
Yeah. I mean, how ingenious to latch onto that 80210 and to take advantage of that.
And make those early 90s style t-shirts.
Exactly.
And
those, I remember I saw, I think a baby onesie was the first time I'd seen it.
Yeah.
And I lost my mind because it was perfect. It made perfect sense.
Yeah, I always say it's the only work zip code I've ever memorized. You know, like, how many people know their work zip code, right?
Yeah, I
gotta look at my own business cards to figure out where to go in the morning. So.
Absolutely,
this one's in my head.
Yeah, good.
Knowing that you spent time in Germany, knowing your relationship to beer, I'm now realizing the conversations we've had over the last 2 months about who succeeds and who doesn't out of this. Do you think that this kind of model, especially with the food, is going to define the breweries who make it? Is it this, and then there's the big breweries? Like, we're not going to see those kind of...
Yeah, I'm worried about the middle guys.
Yeah.
You know, that's and you know, talking about the troubles and stuff, these guys are in trouble before any of this happened.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? They're not big enough to ride out the storms, but they're not small enough to turn quickly, to pivot quickly. And I, you know, I've been in this long enough now that when I started, the brew pub was the answer. It became a curse for a long period of time. Everybody wanted a food truck.
Yeah.
But now it seems to be that it's come back around. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I was a very young brewer, and my buddy Marty kind of hit on it pretty early. He's like, you want people to stay for 2 to 4 beers, you know? And if you only have beer, that can be kind of difficult. You know what I'm saying? Because you know, we're not trying to get drunk necessarily. We want you to have a good time. We want you to be responsible. But I also need you to have 2 or 3 beers to pay for my lights and my staff. And so it just kind of became obvious. And I'll go back to the food truck thing here because I have a good friend that summed it up very well. But my point is to get people to stay and enjoy themselves and have that third beer, it's nice to have the deli. You know, so I have a good buddy that I've known since I moved to Colorado 10, 12 years ago. His name is Robbie, and he works at Ironton Distillery on the north side of town. But he said it pretty early about food trucks. He's like, it's hard to put your faith in a man whose primary sense of income is on a set of wheels.
It's true.
And so they were continually letting us down, this excuse, that excuse, and eventually Colby just got tired of it. Okay. He's like, we're going to do this ourselves, and we're going to do it right every time. So he's kind of taken my mantra of right every time into that sort of kitchen side of it. And I tell you, if we had opened that 6 months later, a year later, we might have had big trouble. I don't know that we would be sitting here now. I don't know that we would have survived March and April. But again, because we had that kitchen, because of the way things went down in Denver, we were never closed. Yeah.
You guys were open the entire time, is
the
that right?
The entire time, yeah, every morning. Amazing. I mean, we were, like I was saying earlier, crawlers and burritos to the whole neighborhood.
That's awesome.
We delivered to hospitals, you know, and it. We just did whatever we could, one, to add a little comfort during an unknown time. You know, like you can always count on us to have this porter. We're always going to be here. You know, doors open, come in, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Sure. And even now, I think I've been in quite a few restaurants since all of this went down, and I still think we're doing it the best that we can, you know.
How crowded are any other breweries in town on a Tuesday at 1 o'clock? I mean, that for part sure surprised me, actually, in a good way, that I haven't been in since before the troubles. I'm going to use that from now on.
There you go.
And I honestly, I think that the last time I was in, that there was still some finished work to be done in the deli. It was open, mm-hmm. But you guys were, it was close, right?
It was.
But to be able to drive up today and see the patio full,
mm-hmm.
and people in the brewery on a day and time that any other normal brewery might not even be open right now,
right,
is pretty awesome.
And the sad part of all this is we're running waits on the weekend. It can take
really?
An hour for somebody to even sit down in this building. And it, again, we're just trying to be safe and do it right.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
I want to say it's frustrating. You know, I don't want anybody to have to sit there and wait, but thank you. You know, thank you very much, Denver, for giving us this opportunity.
Is Pearl Street one of the thoroughfares that maybe was or is being or should be considered for shutdown to become a pedestrian-type mall?
You know, parts of it, yeah.
Yeah, I feel like where you are, you guys would
absolutely
benefit even more.
But we've got a school right here in the middle of the street. So there's access for parents and, you know, things like that. But definitely this end and then down towards Sushi Den and, you know, the other end for sure. It would be nice to see. And I think it would bring a little life. You know, when you go to these pedestrian centers in Europe, they're very vibrant. And if we could bring a little bit of that, you know, here, it would be wonderful. Yeah.
You guys are a mixed use neighborhood for sure.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
And the school maybe notwithstanding, right? I think driving in a rush from Louisiana down, I'm thinking to myself, God, this, I shouldn't even be on this road right now. I mean, this should 100% be,
yeah,
you know, resident and pedestrian access only.
I would agree.
I mean,
yeah,
I would think that that would be huge for people like you and some of the other food and drink establishments on this end of the block, especially. And you know, I don't know how that gets started or how you guys approach it, but man, I can only imagine that it'd be good for the neighborhood and you guys both. So
yeah, it would be. And you know, to a certain degree, it would add a little stability to these ends of the neighborhoods too, because
sure.
I've got right across the street from us is a house, you know, that raising their kids there, and you know, all of that just right over there. And to for it to blend is a wonderful thing.
It's got to be, yeah, it's got to be done the right way. I get hungry about 11 every day and walk out on the front porch and look around and just go back.
Where am
the
I going?
Basement,
yeah.
Because yeah. I'm stuck in the burbs now, and I don't have the ability to walk a block or two and grab a pint and a deli sandwich. That'd be amazing if I could.
Yeah. But no, it's a blessing and a curse, I guess.
Yeah, I'm sure it cuts both ways, but.
Want to be mindful of your time, because I know that you've got you know, fathering to do. But let me ask you, what have you learned? You know, you talking to Colby and the rest of the crew, that other than, you know, selling beer out the window, what changes have you made that you plan on maybe scaling up? That you plan on committing to? Is it more distribution? Is it fewer kegs on taps? Like what's the plan? What are you talking about?
It hasn't. For me, the plan hasn't changed too much.
Okay.
The crutch of it is, in my mind, is one, you only sell one thing. Sell it as many ways as you can.
Okay.
Firkins, cans, growlers. Growlers are done now, but you know what I mean? Try to get that product out in as many forms as you can.
Okay.
But two, the other thing is, look, we have our staples. People love Tropic Snow Dance. People love the Madagascar Cream, you know? Our hazies have done really well. But what people really want is choice. They, you know, guys that come in frequently, girls that come in frequently, the first question they ask is what's new. And so, and this is, again, it's a bit of a strength with a 10-barrel system. We can pivot quickly so that I've always got, every couple weeks, I've always got something new coming out, you know. And I think that's the strength of this size. You know, we have supply issues because we're only so big.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, I'm going to have something new out next week. So, and that's what really, people love that, you know.
For sure. Makes total sense.
They love consistency, but they also love, like, you know, for instance, we're doing, I'll call them a smoothie beer, you know, where it's a base sour with a name of fruit or, you know, a specialty hop. And so we only make a few kegs of those, but it brings people in the door like, oh my Lord, look at what they've done with blackberries, you know,
yeah.
And they'll have one and then they'll go back to the one that they always come in here for, you know, whatever it may be. So I think that's really what the trick is, honestly.
Well, you guys are doing fantastic. Jay, do you have any closing comments, questions, anything that we didn't get to?
No, I'm just disappointed I didn't schedule my lunch here.
Yeah.
I wasn't even thinking about it, frankly. Next time, yeah. I'll blame it on the other guy.
Knowing this will air on Thursday, is anything going on that you want to advertise? I know that GABF is obviously doing their virtual passport. I don't know if you guys were on that.
We did not participate this year. I'm not a very competitive guy.
Yeah.
So I've had a few medals at GABF. I feel great about it. But for me, it's more about the camaraderie,
mm-hmm.
you know, meeting the people that I've trained, the people that train me.
Yeah.
Having those nights out with, you know, friends in the industry. And so without that, it loses a bit of its appeal,
yeah.
At least for a non-competitive guy like me.
That makes sense.
Now, my buddy down in Dallas, forget it. He's in,
okay.
You know, like
yeah.
He sees this as the year. So, and it's, you know, it's, I'm done brewing this week on Wednesday,
okay.
Just because out of habit, I've unblocked my weekend. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
After 13 GABS, that's just automatic.
Take a break then.
Yeah, I'm going to go do something fun with my kid or something.
Much deserved time
for
out
sure.
of town.
Well, Greg Matthews, Platte Park Brewing, thank you so much for having Jay and I in here. We've been here numerous times before. It's not going to change. So,
a couple of events here.
Yeah, I know. We did it. So we'll probably have to go have a beer now and, you know, let you get out of here.
Thank you, gentlemen.
All right. Thanks, Greg. Take
care. Real pleasure.
Greg,
appreciate
it.
Thank you very much.
Cheers.